How many people do you know who struggle with their health? Chances are, whether they show it or not, most of the people in your life do. And chances are, you're one of them. Whether you're dealing with anxiety, depression, endometriosis, acne, eczema, autoimmune, thyroid, Lyme, brain fog, fatigue, or any other symptom or condition, you're far from alone. Living with symptoms has become the new normal. So no more guessing games. It's time to get answers. Welcome to the Medical Medium Podcast. I'm Anthony William.
Today we're talking about food poisoning. Doesn't sound serious, does it? But it is. Real serious. Many people have lost their lives because of food poisoning. I don't mean a quality of life they lost. I mean, they're dead. They're gone. They died. Thousands upon thousands upon hundreds of thousands, and over the years, millions have passed away because of food poisoning. It's way more serious than anybody knows. It's underreported, it's underrated, and it's ignored. Passed off as, oh, you don't feel good? Got a little food poisoning? You'll get over it in a little bit. But what if you don't get over it? There's a lot to learn about it. Fasten your seatbelts. Get ready for this ride. We're hopping on the food poisoning train.
Oh my god. I can talk now. Yeah, I'm in the hospital. They think it's food poisoning. Yeah, I had some oysters yesterday at a pub. Yeah, what can they do? They said they can't do anything. They had me on a morphine drip and an IV, and they said they have to wait. They did a CAT scan and MRI. Yeah, there's nothing they can do. I don't understand. They got hospitals and the best medical everything, and they can't fix it.
Seen it, heard it, saw it 100 times and more. And it's been happening for years out there. It's underrated, under-respected. Food poisoning needs to get the respect. It needs to be seen as something serious because it has killed people. It's still killing people. It's that serious. And if it didn't kill someone, it's maimed them. Maimed them for life. And should it get respect? I don't know. I'm wondering, because most of the type 1 diabetics out there is because of food poisoning. Does that get respect? It should. But then again, people don't know that type 1 diabetics have been food poisoned. People don't realize this. It's not information that's out there. It's medical medium information, but that's why so many type 1 diabetics are type 1, because their pancreas was injured by foodborne pathogens. Everything was fine. There was no problems with their pancreas. There was no blood sugar disturbances, no blood sugar imbalances. They get food poisoning. 2 days later, they're type 1. Or a month later, they're type 1. Depending on the variation of food poisoning, the seriousness of the food poisoning, and if the food poisoning itself didn't injure the pancreas directly, where it created the food poisoning right away, it injured the pancreas just enough and weakened the immune system, allowing other viruses, pathogens, other critters to get into the pancreas and cause a problem with it. And that does happen to a lot of people. And when someone is diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, it's life-changing in a very hard way for so many. It's shocking. And it can be really difficult for a lot of people struggling with type 1 to have that. The diagnosis itself is very scary for many. And to think that a meal at a restaurant or a home cooked meal, not carefully home cooked, created a situation where the person got a foodborne pathogen that made them so sick it injured organs internally and injured the pancreas, creating that type 1 diabetes. Now, what about a lifelong bloating problem? I don't mean just mild bloating, like so many influencers show on social media, as they're talking about their lymphatic drainage, their massages, and their dehydrating diets and caffeine diets. I'm talking about bloating that's so painful, so disturbing, distension that's so difficult to function or live with. You can't wear any clothes. Any clothes you wear puts pressure on it. Walking's difficult, and you're constantly in pain and discomfort. Serious bloating problems that many people have. What about that? That's a food poisoning problem for a lot of cases. Not all bloating cases that are that serious, but a big hunk of them out there in the world. That's because of food poisoning at some point and at some time in their life. And when those people got food poisoning, the bugs in that food attacked the stomach lining, the stomach glands that produce the HCL, attacked the intestinal tract. The immune system all throughout the body was completely compromised, allowing other things like strep and staph and C. diff to rise up in the intestinal tract, unproductive fungus and yeast to rise up in the intestinal tract, and to create a long-standing chronic condition long after the food poisoning. Then how about all the H. pylori cases? How about that? You heard that before, right? So many people, they go to their functional medicine doctor, their GP, their internal medicine doctor, and they go there, and the doctor's like, well, I think you might have H. pylori because everything else checks okay in your intestinal tract, your colon. We did the colonoscopy. Everything looks okay. So I'm thinking we got some H. pylori here. And next thing you know it, they're testing for it. They're looking for it. And they're like, ooh, it looks like you might have H. pylori. Let's do some antibiotics and some other things. What about that H. pylori? How did it get there? Everybody has H. pylori in their system for the most part out there. But how did it get to the level it does? When you go to the doctor and they're saying, this is your problem, it's H. pylori. And that H. pylori is causing problems in your intestinal tract, your duodenum, your stomach. Well, it rose up because food poisoning knocked you down. And so many people, that's what happened, where they got a case of food poisoning and then the H. pylori came later. It could come a week later and become a problem. It could come a month later, 6 months later. But it took the food poisoning to knock that person's immune system down, to knock their intestinal tract down, to knock their stomach lining, duodenum, colon lining down, even hit the liver pretty hard, the pancreas pretty hard, and then the person's struggling. Doesn't know they're on low battery and struggling, but they are. And then something else rises up, and it's the H. pylori. It was there before, but now it's gaining strength, and it's not being stopped. Or they contract a new H. pylori somehow and they don't have the immune system or the gastric strength to keep it at bay. And they get it and it's strong and it takes over. And then there's the people that know. They know without a shadow of a doubt that they got food poisoning and they're sick from it and they're staying sick from it and they know why. Because it was food poisoning, and they know why. And it's in their mind, it's in their head, it's in their consciousness. They think about it every day as they're nauseous, they can't eat sometimes, they're having all kinds of pain, bloating, gas, and cramps. They don't feel themselves, they feel weak, some days a little stronger, some days weaker again. And they know it happened when they got the food poisoning, when they ate in that restaurant or ate something at home that wasn't quite right, and it started right after it. And for many people, it could take months upon months and even years to get back to where they were before they got food poisoned. 3, 4, 5 months can go by, and they're still sick and nauseous and weak, and they know why. That's how difficult food poisoning can be. You can get maimed by it and be really injured and have a lifelong injury by it, and you can be also injured by it temporarily, where it's just 4 or 5 months, or it could be just 1 month, but then later on, you get tripped up. It becomes this past trigger that helps to bring on other things, and that happens to a lot of people as well. Either way, food poisoning is serious, and it should, once again, be respected. Yeah, can I have buttered toast with that? Fantastic. Bacon, ham, yep, sausage, 3 eggs scrambled. Yep. Okay, and is this jelly right here? This is jelly, right? I didn't see it come out of a package. It's just in the dish he brought out. Is it old? Is it new? Or whose was it? It's fresh? Fresh made? Okay. I'm going to slap some of that on there. Oh, thank you for the toast. I'm going to put some of that jelly on here too. Oh, and by the way, this butter, it wasn't in the package. Yeah. So sometimes you guys used to bring out like these little packages and I open them up individually and scoop the butter out. And then I put that on my toast. This is just butter in a dish. Has it been sitting out long? Is it? It's fresh? Okay, thank you. That's all I needed to hear. It's fresh. Oh, perfect. I'm going to put that on here. Ah, nice. Okay. Good. Yes, anyway, I love this place. Yeah, it's so great. Yeah. No, it's just been bothering me in the last 5 minutes. Yeah. I don't know. It's gas. Yeah, it's gas. I'm going to try to squeeze some out. Just hold on. Yeah. I feel a little better. I gotta go to the restroom. Just bear with me. I gotta head to the restroom. I'm just not feeling that great. Yeah. All right, I'll be right back. Day to day, you're doing your thing. You feel okay. Everything's fine. You're living your life. And then all of a sudden, you're sick. Your stomach doesn't feel right. Your intestinal tract doesn't feel right. Your torso doesn't feel right. You're nauseous. Something's wrong. You're not feeling that great. You're going to the bathroom and it's not normal to what you remember normal was. And then you head to the doctor. Doctor doesn't even diagnose food poisoning. It's not even on the menu. But he does diagnose you with gastritis. That's your diagnosis now. It's gastritis. The old diagnosis of gastritis many years ago was gas. Gas and bloating, discomfort and cramping with some stomach pain and painful gas. Sometimes extremely painful gas and lots of gas. You go to the doctor and the doctor will say that's gastritis. Now they've changed it. They've altered it. They don't correct it out there. They don't say, hey, science was saying this one thing all these years, and then science stopped, the medical world stopped, and now the medical world's saying this for some reason, you guys. Now it's just inflammation of the stomach caused by alcohol and other things and so forth. But either way, you get the gastritis diagnosis, it comes, even if the doctor says, well, it's inflammation of the intestinal tract and stomach, it's still gastritis. Where did it come from? Why is it here now? What happened? Meanwhile, there was a trigger, a big trigger. It was death by 1,000 cuts. It was food poisoning. And maybe it wasn't even your first food poisoning. What if it was your third? What if it was your 20th? What if you didn't know that that wasn't a stomach bug or stomach flu 2 years ago? Because there was no stomach flu going around and you had a stomach ache of epic proportion and it was food poisoning. What about mild versions? What about that diarrhea that you had and the vomiting that you had 1 week last year? Was that food poisoning? Yeah, because a lot of people get it periodically. They get it a lot. They can get it 50 times in 10 years. They can get it to 150 times in 20 years. That's how many cases, that's how many times people get infected by foodborne pathogens, and that's how many times people struggle with food poisoning, and then it becomes that ultimate trigger, that trigger into other problems, allowing other things to rise up and wreak havoc long after the food poisoning stops. Appendectomies, anybody? Let's talk about appendicitis, because this is a big one right here. Almost all, yes, almost all, not all, but almost, appendicitis cases are from food poisoning, foodborne pathogens. Either the food poisoning lowering the immune system, destroying the environment in the colon, the intestinal tract, in the duodenum and stomach, destroying that environment to such a degree and challenging the immune system to such a degree, the appendix gets attacked. The appendix gets attacked either by the foodborne pathogen in which the person consumed, which got them the food poisoning, or something that's inside of them like E. coli that's been waiting, pockets of E. coli that have been building up in the colon in there for many years, waiting for a chance to blow up large, including strep, to blow up large and C. diff as well. And then when that immune system's lowered from getting food poisoning, anything sitting down in there has a chance to be like, this is my break. And the E. coli just starts to move. It starts to grow fast. And the immune system is not monitoring it. It's not covering it. It's not keeping it back. And then it finds its way into the appendix. And then boom, it inflames it. And this could happen long, long after the food poisoning. It could happen months after. It doesn't have to happen 2 days after, but it does in a lot of cases. So let's talk about that. So many people get food poisoning, they're vomiting, they're having diarrhea, and they're in trouble. They're getting dehydrated. They can't hold anything down. They're in the bathroom vomiting constantly. They can't sleep. They can't rest. Their stomach is killing them. Their intestinal tract is killing them. They're getting sicker and sicker. And then a family member or they just say, I have to go to the hospital. It's time. And they go to the hospital. And they're in there and they get a CAT scan and they get an MRI and they look at their appendix and their appendix looks disastrous. The doctor's like, well, you have an appendix problem now. We might have to do surgery. And they don't say, well, the food poisoning is the problem. They'll just say it's the appendix is the problem the whole time. But really the person got the food poisoning, which is leading to their appendix being a problem, which takes us to this next part. Many of these appendicitis cases are because of food poisoning, whether it's a week after the food poisoning, whether it's 2 days after, or even months after. What they find is the appendix gets tattered and ragged and beaten down and worn down. And when they look on the CAT scan and they take a look at that appendix, they see it's swollen and inflamed. And they see it's kind of tattered. They see it's bulbous. And they go, whoa, you need this out. But what happens here is there are millions of these surgeries, millions worldwide of surgeries where they're removing the appendix. And many, many, if not most of these cases are because of food poisoning at some point in time. Whether it was that week, whether it was that month, because the appendix can actually become a problem later on. It's part of the post-injuries from food poisoning originally. Which leads us to this next part, unnecessary surgeries. Unnecessary appendix surgeries. This is an important one right here. Because someone gets food poisoning, they have a really bad stomach ache, they're vomiting, they're throwing up, they're nauseous. And everything is tender and everything hurts. They're in the hospital and the doctors don't believe that it's food poisoning. They just don't think it's anything the person ate. Like, what did you eat? And the person would be like, well, I ate just my normal stuff and I ate whatever and I ate my dinner that I usually eat. And what's happening here is food poisoning doesn't have to come on right when you have a meal. It could come on 2 days later after getting it. It can even come 3 days later. So when the doctor's saying, what did you eat last night? And you're saying a can of soup. The doctor's going like, well, it's definitely not food poisoning. There shouldn't have been anything wrong there. It's not botulism or anything. So we think it's something else. So they do a CAT scan and they look at the appendix. And the hospitals are a cash cow business with appendectomies. So what they'll do is they'll say, well, we just to play it safe, we think you have an appendix problem. It looks like it. It doesn't look great because it's got wear and tear on it. And it may not look great. And they'll be like, it has to come out. Meanwhile, the person's just laying there suffering with food poisoning. And they don't realize it. But the food poisoning is a delayed effect. Days later, they're not saying, what did you eat the morning before? What did you eat the night before the night before? And what did you eat 4 days ago? They're not doing that kind of like research. They're not doing that kind of intel. They're not looking into the person, investigating. Instead, it's like last night. It's always like, what did you eat last night? Or what did you eat tonight? Because now you're in the hospital at 2 a.m, vomiting and you're in pain. So they'll be like, what did you eat tonight? But they won't go further back. And that determines if they're going to think you have food poisoning right there alone. Is they're not going to say, what was it 2 days later? And all of a sudden, 3 days later, you were at a fair and you were eating clams at a fair. And they're not thinking about clams at a fair 3 days ago or egg salad in a park 2 days ago. They don't go that far back, or the two restaurants you ate at 4 days ago. So what happens is they're going by last night or tonight's meal. And a lot of times people have this innocent meal that just seems like the normal meal that shouldn't pose a problem. And then the person's confused who's sick, the doctor's confused, and they think it's your appendix. And now the appendix is coming out when it doesn't need to. It's their go-to. Anybody who enters the hospital with a bellyache, they are revved up to remove the appendix. Many times it's necessary, and many times it's not necessary. Found you guys. Amazing picnic. Mayonnaise, mayonnaise, mayonnaise. I got my egg salad right here. I made a big one. My grandma's old recipe. Yeah. Why is it still warm? I just didn't need to refrigerate it. I made it today. Yeah, I was just sitting on the counter all day and I was late. I was driving around. God, it's a hot day. I was trying to find this place and maybe it's too warm. Egg salad. Can't leave it in the sun. Why? Because you can die. Literally. You can die. Does that make any sense? Chicken. You can't eat it raw. Why? You can die. It has to be cooked all the way through. Your chicken can't be pink in the center. It has to be cooked. Turkey, Thanksgiving, or turkey anytime, can't be raw in the center. Has to be cooked good. It can't be a rotten old turkey that went bad and then half cooked, or you're going down. Yep. They can kill you. Exactly. Raw meat. Yeah, I know a lot of people eat raw meat out there. Tartar. They do it. But it's a crapshoot. It's gambling. It's Russian roulette. It's anything and everything bad. Shouldn't eat raw meat. But these are just some things that we're talking about here. I want to go back to the egg salad a little bit. Pasta salad. Egg salad. Potato salad. Anything you have mayonnaise, like your conventional, standard, traditional potato, egg, pasta salad with all that mayo in there, or a mayo dressing of some kind. It's that mayonnaise. A mayonnaise can't be left in the sun. It can't sit out there all day on a picnic table. It can't sit in a park. We can get in trouble. And we can, because mayonnaise has egg in it. That egg will actually grow something rapidly and fast, real fast. If someone sneezes on that egg salad whatever's in them that gets sneezed out of them and that lands in that egg salad on that picnic table will grow really quick, really quick. It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever bacteria, whatever viruses, you name it, it will grow. So whatever that mayonnaise is in, chicken salad, egg salad, pasta salad, potato salad, whatever, it's going to create a growing, a proliferating situation. That means a bacteria lands in it, it's going to proliferate rapidly. And then someone's going to eat it later on at the end of the day, and they're going to feel sick. They might get a mild case of food poisoning. Very mild, not even realize what it really is. Upset stomach, maybe they vomit once, and it passes. And some people might be a lot worse. They can get into some real serious trouble. One of the contenders, though, for food poisoning cases, a big contender, is sushi. That is where the money is at, meaning that's where the food poisoning is at, which makes the hospitals a lot of money. Anytime you're dealing with raw fish, there could be trouble. Raw tuna, there could be trouble. Every time I see people out there on social, influencers and so forth, and they're doing sushi, and they're just at their sushi moment, and it's like, I'm getting sushi. I can't wait. I'm so excited. I cringe because I know that their day is going to come. It may not be in that moment. It may not be that very sushi they're eating in that moment, but it's going to come. It's going to hit them hard, and they're going to have a hard life for a while because of it. It could get real serious. Raw fish is scary, scary, scary. With food poisoning with raw fish, it's like a double whammy. You got the mercury inside the fish. Mercury will feed the foodborne pathogens on and in the fish. So now you got two things going on. You got raw fish with a whole bunch of bugs on there, and you got mercury in the fish that the bugs love to feed on. The mercury preserves the bugs, helps to keep them alive and keep them fat and happy. They say out there, if you're pregnant, stay away from raw fish. I wonder why.
So yeah, I have been like pregnant now for like the first trimester, 3 months now. Okay, oh, I would love to order this. Can I get sushi? Why not? Really? Oh, that's right, it's raw. I know, my doctor told me no raw fish. Can I get the cooked sushi roll?
Which leads to the next problem. Wherever they're playing around with raw fish, you can get food poisoning really easily. Doesn't matter if you order something cooked or something else on the menu. Whatever you choose. You're in a restaurant where there's foodborne pathogens on the cutting boards, on the counters, on the chef's hands, on the waitress's hands, on everybody's hands, on the knives, on the spoons, on the forks, all of it. It's there and it's ready and waiting, and it's easy to get contamination, cross-contamination on anything and everything, taking you to a place where you can get food poisoning even if you didn't have the raw fish. Let's talk about the gallbladder. That's another one right there. Gallbladder is also cash cow for the hospitals and the medical industry. They pluck them like cherries on a tree. Food poisoning is the gallbladder interrupter. It can attack the gallbladder. And many times it doesn't attack the gallbladder, but at the hospital, they think it is the gallbladder. So we're back to the same thing like the appendix. It's like, is it hurt? Is it not hurt? Is it the problem? Is it not the problem? And it's back to the same old thing. What did you eat last night? What did you eat tonight? Well, I had a can of soup. I had a sandwich. I eat the same sandwich every night, so I don't know why it would bother me now. And they go, yeah, you're right. You don't have food poisoning, because they don't really have a way of testing for food poisoning. So they'll just be like, let's do a CAT scan. Let's look at your gallbladder. Let's take a look. And some people have a gallbladder that's always slightly chronically inflamed for a whole bunch of other reasons. And then they see that and they go, we have to take the gallbladder out. And then in some severe cases of food poisoning, the foodborne pathogen ravishes the gallbladder, attacks it directly, inflames it, and then the gallbladder has to come out. The same thing like the appendix. Sometimes the foodborne pathogen from the food poisoning situation goes after the appendix. It's inflamed, and then we're in trouble. All this can happen fresh when you get food poisoning, but then the food poisoning can go away. You didn't even go to a hospital, or you went to a hospital and then you got released from the hospital as you started to recover. And then weeks later, you're getting a pain. It's a gallbladder pain. Or weeks later, you're getting a pain in your lower abdomen and it's appendicitis. And in these situations, it's the immune system was dropped. It was rocked by the food poisoning initially. So now we have other things stirring the pot. Strep and E. coli and other pathogens, and you're now getting a post-food poisoning problem. One of the sad things about food poisoning is they don't know what to do about it. So you go to the hospital and they can only offer a few things. One is an IV drip, a saline solution, a saline drip in case you're dehydrated. Now that's really helpful. If you have a bad case of food poisoning and you got the runs, diarrhea, and you're vomiting and you can't hold anything down at all and you're in agony and it's going on too long, the hospital can save your life. It can save your life with that food poisoning. They can hook you up to an IV bag and they can keep you from getting severely dehydrated when you can't have any fluids enter your mouth orally. It just won't stay there. You'll get too sick. You'll throw it back up. So that's one thing that's amazing about hospitals with care with food poisoning. And then pain relief. That's the only pretty much other thing they can do is offer pain relief. And that usually works with morphine. So with severe food poisoning cases, the protocol in the hospital is morphine. And that's what they use to dull down the pain so you can talk, so you can lay there, get a little sleep, so your body can heal. That's what they offer there. And for some people, yes, it saves their life because the pain is so excruciating, they feel like they want to die. And so pain relief is one thing that gives them an edge. The other thing is the IV bag. Now, I'm not saying morphine's a great thing. I'm just saying what the protocol is at the hospital to try to help somebody when they're in devastating, critical care, like intensive care kind of stuff, the food poisoning. That's what they do. And then they do the waiting game. They wait it out. They give it 24 hours. Then they give it 48 hours. And that is the part that's kind of scary because how serious is this food poisoning? A lot of people, it's so serious. The food poisoning, the pathogens, the foodborne illness eats their guts alive, causing hemorrhaging, causing strokes, causing all kinds of blood clots. And then the person gets dehydrated even with the IV. They get sick. They can't eat again. And it's devastating. And then they lose their life. That's the most extreme version, or actually the most extreme version is when they lose their life in the restaurant itself. They're in the restaurant or they're at home. They get the foodborne pathogens right there. They die before they even get to the hospital. That's the most extreme versions of food poisoning. I've recovered many, many people throughout the years that were injured severely by food poisoning. And they got their lives back. Severe cases. Cases that made it so they were sick months and months later, suffering and struggling with no hope and no signs of recovery. And medical medium information brought them back to life. I've seen this over and over again. It's part of the incredible phenomenon of medical medium information healing that has happened around the world, and food poisoning is one of those. I watched a lot of people get on the edge of losing their lives. Dehydration, severe sickness, being chronically ill after because everything was triggered in their body that was awaiting to come and cause chronic illness. And recovery is possible. It truly is. But food poisoning should be respected. And everything around it should be understood. It's one of those things we need to do to protect ourselves. For food poisoning recovery, check out Cleanse to Heal. It has mono eating, very important for people with gut health problems from food poisoning and other issues, gut related. Cleanse to Heal, and Mono Eating. Also check out Brain Saver books, the medical medium books about the brain. There's also areas in those books, information and tips about eating out in restaurants and how to protect yourself. It's not considered by medical science as a dangerous winter and a brutal trigger, even though many have lost their lives eating their fancy, delicious meals with their fancy steak knives. Fun abominations gave them a high. What fun dinners. Some food should never be toxic, but that's not how this planet rolls. It's a wonder why tainted food should cause someone to die from eating a buttered roll. But yet, it has, and has a long history. These days, the superbugs are getting out of control, putting so many in misery. As the industry just sighs, as food poisoning takes its toll, yummy, 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 I got bugs in my tummy, and they're making me feel kind of squirrely. When I went to the bathroom, it made a swirly. I don't know why it's worsening. I feel I'm going to Hurley. The doctor asked what I ate today, and I said nothing gnarly, but yet I'm so queasy. But for some reason, I'm not sneezy. So confusing. Wow, my stomach ache doesn't feel soothing. As the hours go by, I feel I'm gonna cry, but I know I will get past this and get on the other side. And you will, and you can, when understanding how to navigate through this foodborne land, we can protect ourselves and err on the side of caution. Get well.
Original published medical medium information gets stolen and poached by podcast doctors, social media doctors, influencers, and medical clinics. Medical medium information has never yet been proven wrong by medical science and research. Instead, the opposite, only proven right and then taken from medical medium published material and used in the conventional and alternative health communities. Medical medium information continually sets the stage for medical science to understand chronic illness better. If you choose to share or use the original, unique content from the Medical Medium podcast, books, or Medical Medium social media, please cite where this information comes from, so others who see and learn of this information have a chance to know where it all originates, to give them an opportunity to heal, so they don't end up losing years of their life searching for answers like so many have before them. The Medical Medium information here on this podcast doesn't come from broken science, interest groups, medical funding with strings attached, botched research, lobbyists, internal kickbacks, persuaded belief systems, private panels of influencers, health field payoffs, trendy traps, or gathered bits and pieces of gimmicky confusion. Because chronic illness is exploding like never before in our modern day history, it takes a greater force than us down here. It takes a helping hand from above. Medical medium information has street cred. It's an organic movement of countless people around the world healing. More healing stories of real people not being paid to tell their life-changing experiences of rising out of the ashes of sickness and entering into the light of full recovery, getting their lives back and finally healing when nothing else in the world of health could move the needle and get them better. The information on this podcast is not man-made. It comes from above, from a higher source. Whatever you believe in, whether God, the universe, the light, or the creator, or if you believe in nothing at all, that we're just floating through space together on this rock, know that the information you hear on this podcast is separate from all the other noise out there. It comes from a different place, a pure, untampered with, advanced, clean, uncorrupted, original, primary source, a higher source, spirit of compassion.